But it seems to me that there's, conceptually speaking, a very, an undeniable connection between Kol Dodi Dofek and challenges of the Holocaust. What is that philosophical common denominator, Rafi? Okay, I think that's true. That's one of the six or seven things that Rav Lichtenstein suggests, but that's, I think, a little bit more practical than what I'm looking for. But philosophically speaking, right, what's Rav Lichtenstein basically saying in this brief essay, Shlomi?
That just like the Rav said in Kol Dodi Dofek, we shouldn't struggle with the why, but we should deal with what we're going to do in the future.
Exactly right. The whole premise of the essay is, you know, why is this happening? Well, is it Hester Panim? Is it Mipnei Chata Einu? Is this just a world where Bechira Chafshis has to be left unrestricted? And all these things are sort of possible, but, you know, these questions in the end may be totally unanswerable or unknowable from a human point of view. But Aleinu La'asot... And then he goes into all of these different things that he thinks are just absolutely vital for a person to do in response, which is exactly what the Rav was describing in terms of, you know, Goral versus Yehud and being a person of destiny and not missing an opportunity. And I think that, even though it's not referenced here, I think this is just one of these great examples where the Rav sort of set the terms of the discussion. And I think it's even more powerful that Rav Lichtenstein in this instance didn't quote the Rav, because it so shaped his perspective about questions related to human suffering, either personal or national, that he's sort of imbibed it, and this just becomes a complete application of those ideas. So the challenges of the Holocaust, I think, has to be read very much in light of Kol Dodi Dofek. Point number one. Point number two is, I'd like to, as we went through yesterday, the six knocks, I'd like to go through the six or seven areas that Rav Lichtenstein delineates in terms of, you know, what we're supposed to do, is seizing our own collective destiny now, and what his perceptions are of appropriate responses to Shoah. And these, of course, range from things that are completely ben adam la'atzmo, sort of personal responses, and then, of course, Ben Adam, as Rafi was suggesting, Lekihi Lato. So let's start enumerating them. Where does Rav Lichtenstein begin in terms of the response? Eli. What's that? Yeah, so of course, here, again, noting, and this is something, a point that also was developed by the Rav, that memory has a dual component. What's the two aspects of memory? Right, Zecher L'Churban, right, that we should know, you know, that the Jews of the Warsaw Ghetto were deported to, where were they deported to? Jews of the Warsaw Ghetto were all essentially killed in Treblinka, right? And that the Jews of Hungary were killed in Auschwitz. We should know these things. We should know about the Churban. We should have, not everybody's going to know the name of every transit camp. There were thousands of them. But a person should know what the death camps were. A person should know the basic timeline of the Shoah. That's a fundamental part of the response, is to be an informed person. It's not just to know there was a Holocaust and a lot of people died. No, that itself is an affront to the memory of the 6 million. So there's a Zecher L'Churban, but there's another element, which is Zecher L'Mikdash. You have to appreciate what was lost. So to appreciate what was lost means appreciating what a Volozhin was, even though, of course, that was closed before the Shoah, but to understand what Lithuanian Jewry was about, to understand what Hungarian Jewry was about, to understand what German Jewry was about, what the contributions were, the different values stressed by various communities. So that's extremely important. And so, again, you know, you've heard it from me once, you've heard it from me a million times, but the priority placed on knowledge and information and education is just so clear here that we need to be aware of these things. Liz Dahot, to identify, of course, presupposes Leda, to have a knowledge of. And knowledge in general is important. But knowledge, especially of Shoah, is particularly important. And I think that, you know, that it's a pride that we all share in being a part of a yeshiva that puts such a primacy on Holocaust education as courses devoted to Holocaust education. And, you know, the program that's put on here every year is absolutely first rate in every respect. And that's all part of the Zikaron. So excellent, Eli. That's certainly where it starts. Okay, what's the next responsibility that Rav Lichtenstein develops? Go ahead, you. You could read this one inside.
In addition, we have to strive for a higher level of love for our fellow Jews, not just on the basis of the communal faith of the past, but on the basis of our destiny and our common future.
So again, superficially, just, you know, what's unavoidable here in terms of the language?
Destiny.
Right, fate, right. It's the language of the Rav. But, you know, moving to a deeper level of appreciation here is we have to work on Avas Yisrael. We're going to really mourn what was lost, the individual Jews that were lost, the communities that were lost. So there's a kind of a hypocrisy in mourning the loss of individual Jews and communities of Jews and countries of Jews. And then, you know, as far as all the Jews that one meets in the present, having nothing good to say about them, right? So part of mourning the loss of these Jews, the European Jewish communities, etc., is to sensitize oneself to Chaviv Adam and Chaviv in Yisrael and the preciousness of each and every one of our fellow Jews, those that we mourn over because their lives were taken, and those that we're privileged to live with. It shouldn't only be after somebody passes away that we talk about, you know, chaval al da'avdin or delo mishtakchin. We should try to have an appreciation of people when they're with us, and that is certainly an important lekach. Okay, good. Ozzy, why don't you take thirdly? Thirdly, we have to learn from the... Okay, Aaron, go ahead.
Thirdly, we have to learn from the poverty and suffering of the past, how truly fortunate we are here and now, in the sense indicated in the Mishnah and Avot, who is wealthy, who is satisfied with his lot. Every person is capable of seeing himself as discriminated against or as unfortunate in some respect, but when we encounter genuine suffering, it is easier to put everything into its proper perspective and regain our sense of priorities. As part of this, perhaps we need to learn to appreciate little things too, even levels of spirituality which are less than lofty.
Well, this is a very fascinating thing. I'm going to come back to that sentence in just a moment. But this is sort of like a basic moral response. And you encounter, you heard Dr. Avital talk about, you know, what it means to be hungry. You know, how many of us can truly say that we've lived through sustained periods of hunger? You know, my daughter knows there's a rule in our house that we never say that this food is, and then have a pejorative. You know, you can choose to say that, you know, not my cup of tea, literally and figuratively, but you cannot disparage food. And there's a reason for that in our family. It's because we come from survivors, and people didn't have food, and there are plenty of people today who don't have food. And so there's a certain baseline of appreciation that you just have to have for having food per se. You know, v'chadome v'chadome. So it's very important in the face of incredible levels of suffering beyond our capacity to imagine that a person has to have a sense of hakara sato. I remember, you know, when you see the images of the Syrian children being gassed, right? Just can't help but have these feelings. Unspeakable levels of human suffering. Always bring these things to mind. I remember walking through Majdanek. It was March. It wasn't even like January or February. I had like four layers on and a hat and gloves. And I was so cold. I was freezing. The wind was howling. It was like so unpleasant. But I was thinking about my grandfather walking around, that happened to be in Majdanek, other concentration camps, in a thin little shirt, right? No hat, no gloves. And just having a basic sense of Hakaras HaTov for having a coat in the winter. That has to be part of the response. And this line has always been one of my favorite lines in Rav Lichtenstein's entire oeuvre of literature, that everybody is capable, just the nature of life, of seeing themselves as being discriminated against in some way, right? We can all put together some kind of a case for why, you know, our life is an unfortunate life, or how we've had, you know, a raw deal, or whatever it is. But hopefully we gain some perspective in terms of thinking about, you know, what it is, you know, true suffering. And that's something that's really important to bear in mind. Okay. I'm going to skip over the next one for a second. Spend the time that we have on some of the other elements that I think are even more fundamental. Take a look at the passage beginning with, finally, we must be animated by a sense of mission. Okay, Yoni, go ahead.
Finally, we must be animated by a sense of mission, a feeling of duty towards God as well as towards those who sacrifice their lives. Those of us who remain on a battlefield after the great decimation of God's forces have to gird ourselves, pick up their vision, and carry it forward. The same responsibility they carry is now the lot of a much smaller community, and we therefore have to make much more of an effort. In the past, the person who built himself up was free to consider only himself and his own personal interests. In our generation, we have to see ourselves as part of Knesset Yisrael, the congregation of Israel, continuing in the path laid down by our fathers, lifting up the baton that was struck from their hands. We are all, in a sense, survivors. We must always keep the interests of the community in mind and do our best to serve it. Moreover, our people's great and inspiring vision has in no way dimmed, and we must rededicate ourselves to pursuing its realization.
So I think this has the capacity to take Yom HaShoah from a day of the year to be a defining life experience. Yoni, what's essentially being said here? What? This is a critical paragraph. Rafi, what's the charge here?
It's the long mission of everyone who died.
You have what he calls the decimation of God's forces. 18 million Jews in the world in the 19th century. And today, how many do we have? We haven't yet even approached replacement numbers. They're just far fewer. And our mandate, in terms of what we're supposed to be doing here in this world, hasn't changed. And if we're fortunate enough to be here, and in that sense, Haloza Ud Mutsalmeish, each and every one of us is numbered amongst the survivors. The chances of our being here are, you know, I think about this all the time. My wife's grandmother left Berlin on the Kinder transport. Had Britain, not that they couldn't have done much more, they could have and they should have, but at least they took in 10,000 Jewish children, then there's a good chance that my wife's grandmother would not have survived and that my children would not be alive. And in that respect, we all have to try our best to account not only for ourselves, but to consider just how many Jews were taken, and to shoulder a double and a triple and a quadruple load sometimes, because all of these people are no longer around to man their posts. So it takes Yom HaShoah from being just one day a year to something that animates life decisions. We all should have to be able to give an accounting for ourselves, or what are we doing to rebuild Am Yisrael? You know, you may perceive 3/4 of a century as like a significant amount of time, but if I were to say to you, oh, here's a Jew living in Judea in the year 140, what would your first association be? What would you probably say about that person? Somebody's living in Judea in the year 140 CE. You'd say, oh, he's living within a century of Churban Bayis Sheni. I wonder what they're up to. You would instinctively perceive his life in light of the great tragedy of the previous century. And history will look at all of you that way. You think that in 500 years they'll be saying, this was the generation of, people who are focused on Judaism, maybe. Scholars of technology will be interested in Twitter and Facebook or something, but people who are interested in Jewish history, Jews will be thinking about you as saying, well, what did he do for Am Yisrael? Right? There's just been this incredible, unprecedented Churban. What was his contribution? That is the Eben HaBochein. That is the test that we all will pass through. That is the standard to which we have to hold ourselves. That's extremely important. That should be, I think, a defining element for all of us in terms of how we make life choices, with whom we decide to build a family, the commitment to build families per se. I don't want to be too specific or programmatic about it, but this does apply at the level of even Puruvu. So there's Puruvu is a mitzvah in every generation, but Puruvu, there's a different kiyum today. And to whatever extent, I'm not saying a person who can afford to have 3 children should have 10 children, but a person who's weighing the possibility of maybe having a 4th child, so part of the discussion is the Shoah. It may not be the dispositive factor, but it's part of the discussion, is that Am Yisrael suffered a massive blow. And it's not only about Baboker Zerah Sarechav, L'Erev Al Tanach Chadechav, Banim Bi'alduso, Banim Bizeknuso. But I think it goes beyond that. I think it's a part of a sense of rebuilding Am Yisrael that's, I think, very fundamental. Okay, so now let's finish off the essay, 2 final paragraphs. The last paragraph I want to try to focus on a little more extensively. Okay, Aaron, go ahead.
Just the last paragraph?
A
survivor was once asked, after the Holocaust, you're still a Jew? He immediately replied, what else? Should I then become a Gentile? Let us not become entangled in meaningless questions of how they allowed themselves to be led like sheep to the slaughter, etc. What supreme heroism was demonstrated there. Jews saying on their way to the crematoria, joyful are we, how good is our portion, how pleasing our lot. And it was not only the pious and the righteous who proclaimed this.
Yeah.
In addition to devoting rededicated efforts to Knesset Yisrael and the Torah of Israel, let us also take up the task they never had the opportunity to accomplish, building and developing the land of Israel. Anyone who emerges from Yad Vashem experiences profound oppression, and quite understandably so. But when you emerge and see the hills of Judea and Jerusalem rebuilt, you can take some comfort. We should not attempt to do an accounting and say that this is God's compensation to us for the Holocaust. The state of Israel is not the solution to that problem, but rather an opportunity for us to fulfill our mission.
There you have it again, the fate and destiny, so clearly.
It is not an answer, but rather a challenge and destiny, and our responsibility is to work towards its realization.
So, as we'll talk about next week in the context of the second part of Kol Dodi Dofeik, which the Rav already wrote about, but seeing part of what we discussed just a few moments ago of rebuilding Am Yisrael as the broader project, which could of course apply anywhere in the world, that's Chabad's approach, the sort of universalist orientation, go all over and build up Yadus everywhere, like the Pasuk in Mishle of, Yafutsu Mayanosecha Chutza. But for those of us who have a different orientation, the highest form of expression of dedicating oneself to Am Yisrael is, of course, dedicating oneself to Nachalas Yisrael, Ki Lo Yitosh Hashem Es Amo, v'nachalaso lo yazov. So building up the land of Israel as the ultimate expression of rededicating oneself to the Jewish people is a vital manifestation of the internalization of the decimation of the Holocaust. This could be true in practical senses, as we discussed yesterday in terms of the Six Knocks, a Jewish army, a homeland to which Jews can return and seek refuge. All of those elements are certainly true. But when one builds up Israel, yes, mitzvahs yishev eretz Yisrael shkula keneged kol mitzvahs b'Torah in any generation, but again, just like I said about Peru Revu a moment ago, it takes on additional meaning when one considers the fact that the Jewish people, the Jewish nation, suffered such catastrophic losses and reversals during the Shoah. So to contribute to the strengthening of Knesset Yisrael, the Jewish people, through the revitalization of Medinat Yisrael, the sovereign Jewish state, of course, takes on an additional dimension as well. Rav Lichtenstein is extremely careful to say that somehow, you know, the Holocaust, those can be justified because it was part of a historical process that led to the creation of Medinat Yisrael. He nor I do not wish to have any truck with that mentality. Harbei shluchim lamakom, God could have brought about Medinat Yisrael without the death of one Jew, let alone 6 million Jews, so we dare not go down that path. But again, not relating to it some kind of philosophical justification, but to see it as an opportunity to rebuild Am Yisrael, that I think is a davar, a muvan me'ilav. And so for all of us, especially with the proximity of Yom HaShoah and Yom HaTzmaut, to perceive of these days as of a profoundly spiritual character, a test of our inner world. To what extent do we see ourselves on a path towards autonomous self-fulfillment? To what extent do we see ourselves as part of Knesset Yisrael and prepared to dedicate our talents, our resources, our lives towards the embedment of Klal Yisrael, with a particular emphasis on Medinat Yisrael, in light of the devastation that was suffered, the Pasuk that Shlomi quoted earlier today so poignantly and appropriately, Yivku es ha-sereifa asher saraf Hashem. We were all witness to an enormous sereifa, and our responsibility concomitantly is to help rebuild for those of us who are representatives of the Ud Mutzal Me'esh, survivors, descendants of those survivors, to make a firm commitment to always test our lives according to this standard. What are we doing to rebuild Am Yisrael a millennia from now, half a millennia from now, when they would evaluate our lives and their worth? What would we respond? What would we hope to respond when questioned? What did we do to rebuild Am Yisrael after the catastrophic destruction of European Jewry during the Shoah?